Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. Yes, we are solo podcasting today. I have a veritable cornucopia of topics through which we will be meandering. And before we dive in, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button to like, to share, to comment as you are listening to this podcast on an audio platform. I very much appreciate your reviews, preferably the five-star variety. Also inviting you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the very best way to ensure that we get to stay in touch and to stay abreast of all my latest, greatest offerings. One last reminder for my live Language of Healing webinar, which is taking place Thursday, June 26th at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. The webinar will last for 2 hours. It will be recorded, so if you cannot make it live, worry not. You will get access to the recording as soon as we wrap it up. The webinar features an overview of the precepts of the Language of Healing, which we will be talking about a bit in today's podcast. It also gives you a phenomenal opportunity to bring any healing initiations, symptoms, healing upgrades through which you are currently waiting so that we can workshop the languaging, the framing, the narratives live. So run, don't walk to register for my live Language of Healing webinar. All right, I think that does it for housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy today's show with me. So, many things to discuss today. Might be smart to start with the language of healing, as it is certainly timely and relevant. And I received a little bit of pushback about it on Instagram, which I thought was, it created a wonderful opportunity for us to unpack some of the pushback around the idea/truth that language is programming every cell in our body 24/7 as it is. So I had posted a clip from the last Language of Healing webinar that I led, and I was speaking specifically about speaking into the upgrades instead of languaging the issues, the symptoms, the pathologies, the diagnoses in the present moment as a means of reprogramming our bodies for the healing, for the upgrade, for the optimization that we are calling in. And then a super smart man who has followed my work for a long time said, "I call foul. I don't think this is true. This sounds like cherry, merry, sunshine, magical thinking. And when it comes to healing, we need to be realistic about where we're at and deal with the reality." So, A, I agree. I don't agree with the calling foul. I don't agree with him saying that what I'm claiming isn't true. And I also agree, yes, we need to know where we are starting from. Guru Singh, one of my favorite spiritual teachers, always says, like, you can't get to where we're going in any sort of like GPS map without plugging in, here's where I'm at, right? I'm going through this with my business, right? I'm in the process of transitioning, and it took a very real reckoning of like, here's where I'm at. Here's what isn't working for me to A, recognize the need to transition into something different, and B, for me to put together a plan. Here's where I'm at, here's where I'm going. So on the one hand, yes, what he is saying is correct, and it doesn't counter the power of up-leveling our words, thoughts, narratives, and framing around our healing initiations in when it comes to speeding up said healing. So, as I said, we will go deeper into this in the Language of Healing webinar. And one thing, you know, one of the primary precepts of the Language of Healing is let's steer clear of pathologies and diagnoses, because pathologies and diagnoses are coded with stories of devolution, of worst case scenarios, of worst possible statistics, and You know, all these negative associations, like when I say cancer, when I see Parkinson's, we tend to go to worst case scenarios. And so very much, it's more helpful when we're healing to speak to the upgrades we're calling in, instead of continuing to tell the stories of the diagnoses and the pathologies. So when it comes to diagnoses and pathologies, here's my take on it. They are helpful to know what we're dealing with. They're helpful on the back end just to get a clear lay of the land, right? I've spoken to you guys before about the regeneration, strengthening, and upgrading that has been going on in my dental situation. It was helpful for me to endure the radiation and of course do a lot of supplementation on the backside to purify my body from said radiation and to get the x-rays to see here's what I'm dealing with and here are the teeth that are inviting the upgrades, right? So I agree with the gentleman who was pushing back and like, yes, it's very helpful to know here's where we're at. The difference between his perspective and my perspective is one, I don't see any use in pathologizing. Like when I saw the x-rays or when I've dealt with tingling in my hands or opportunities to strengthen and regenerate bones, I don't find it helpful to stick with the negative pathology or diagnoses, right? It's helpful to know here's what I'm dealing with, right? Here are the teeth that are needing healing, right? Get realistic. But after we see that, get rid of the pathologies, get rid of the diagnoses. Yes, I understand what the upgrades are that I'm calling in. I understand when, and this is healed quite well, so I don't feel that there's a danger in speaking to it. And it was helpful to very briefly get the diagnosis of an avulsion fracture in my wrist because it helped me understand, okay, the ligament pulled the bone away. And so the healing that needs to be done is strengthening the ligament, strengthening and regenerating the connection between one part of the bone and the other, right? I understood that. But as soon as I got the diagnosis, I did not articulate the words avulsion fracture until this very moment. I understood, okay, here's what's going on. I got a visual on it so that I understood that compression was helping my wrist upgrade and heal. Compression was helping my bones strengthen and regenerate. And that was my story the entire time that my wrist was wrapped up. I'm strengthening and regenerating my wrist. I did not speak the negative diagnoses to activate those frequencies, those like that the timeline on that healing path, right? Were I to attach to a diagnosis of avulsion fracture, then that would necessarily call in, oh, those generally take 12 weeks to heal and this and this and this. And when I would say avulsion fracture, if I did to another human, that would create the pity eyes feedback loop that we will go deeper into in the webinar. But the key is the diagnoses are helpful for the immediate moment of understanding what the upgrade that we're calling in is, what the new narrative of strengthening the ligament, of strengthening the connection in my bones is going to be. And then from that point, we throw it away and we use our language along with our visualization and all the other healing tools that you know are appropriate for the current healing initiation. And we continue to live into the upgrade. So the whole time that I was dealing with the wrist thing, I'm strengthening and upgrading my wrist. That was it. I don't need to share the negative diagnoses or pathologies with other people who would then feed that story back to me. But the other part of this gentleman's pushback was, I call BS and this isn't possible. It's not possible to regenerate things in this way. And he was actually very specifically talking about regenerating cartilage. And I have had the direct experience after 4 operations on this very sliced up wrist of regenerating the cartilage. So it was the perfect scenario for me to weigh in from personal experience when I had torn my last bits of cartilage as a young gymnast. And the doctor said, well, you no longer have any cartilage in your wrist. It's now just bone rubbing against bone. You'll never do a push-up again. You'll never do a handstand again. You'll never do a cartwheel again, and you'll never do a down dog again. And of course, as you know, I am wired with a lot of Aquarian rebelliousness and contrarian tendencies, I said, just watch me. I will absolutely heal my wrist. And so, you know, I used quite a lot of tools. Urine therapy. At the time, there was this fantastic supplement called Blue Mangosteen, which I've asked David Wolf to bring back so many times. But a lot of it was just me telling my wrist, you're strong, you're healthy. Thank you for being strong. Thank you for regenerating your cartilage and continuing to speak to it, continuing to take in the supplementation that was supporting me, and to not attach to the Western medical representatives' super negative attempts at reading my future and limiting me by telling me what I'm not going to be able to do. I immediately pushed that aside and took on the story, I am healing and regenerating my wrist swiftly and easily. It took some time. It's not like it happened overnight, and it happened. I do handstands, I do push-ups, I do down dogs, I do cartwheels, I do all the things that they told me I would never be able to do, specifically with this methodology. So while I agree with the pushback that we don't want to cherry Mary sunshine our way out of any of the intel that's going to help us in putting together the just right healing narrative for us, we don't want to stay there. We don't want to cling to it. We don't want to use this as a tool to orient. Okay, this is the, you know, this is what the doctors are saying is needing to be fixed. So now, instead of talking about, oh, I'm healing a wrist avulsion, I'm strengthening and regenerating my wrist. That's all anyone needs to know, right? Like, we don't need to repeat these tragic bobagic stories to other people. They're not necessary. You know, when I was looking for cold laser therapy options, yes, I did tell various chiropractors, you know, I'm looking for a cold laser therapy to heal a wrist avulsion. That was it. That's the end of me using that pathology and diagnoses. I've mentioned before, I think on this podcast, but you know, the wrists are a thing for me, not just because of gymnastics, but also as a writer, right? And the repetitive motion. So I had the experience of being in a push-up position and noticing pain moving through my wrist. And I said out loud, I command my wrist to configure to optimal healing, optimal ergonomic positioning, optimal strength and health. And I watched with my own eyes as my wrist and arm readjusted these tiny torques in positioning, in twists, in where I was placing my weight, where I was holding my weight, how my shoulder was rotated. Just by making that command, my whole arm of its own volition reconfigured itself until I was holding a push-up position with absolutely no pain. And the only action that I took was the directive that I gave my body on how to configure. So as I said, we will go deeper into this in the Language of Healing webinar on June 26th. And I would just want to speak to what I am speaking is not airy fairy projected abstraction that is theoretical. I am speaking from lived experience of healing many a fracture, many a tear, many a cavity, right? All of everything that I am teaching in terms of the language of healing is coming from my direct experience as someone who has in the past been quite a bit of a daredevil and prone to various injuries and healing initiations. So I just wanted to get that piece, I don't want to say out of the way because it makes it seem like it's not important or relevant. I wanted to speak to that. I love pushback because it gives me, pushback is fantastic, especially for those of us who are really expansive, who are really flexible, who have really high tolerances for pain and discomfort. Because with that expansive tendency, sometimes it's more challenging to orient. I'll just speak for myself. I was going to say ourselves. Sometimes it's more challenging to orient myself in space, especially like this type of podcasting where I'm just speaking into a tiny dot at the top of my screen. When I get pushback, it's wonderful. Okay, there's feedback. I'm rubbing up against something. Now I get to have a conversation based on how other people are receiving me. It's so helpful. I freaking love it. So as you have any pushback about what I'm sharing, thank you for sharing your pushback in the comments so we can engage a conversation. It also helps me see where are holes in my communication. Where am I skipping over steps so that people aren't understanding what I'm saying or what I'm intending? So yay for pushback. And hydration breaks as well. Okay, next on the list, I'm going to go through a few realms of kind of weaponized language that I'm seeing in the sphere. So I was having dinner at a local hotel, and they're trying to refuse cash. And I'm a regular, so the waiters know that I always pay cash and generally don't give me any guff about it. And this was a night where none of the regulars were on the floor, and it was a new waitress who hadn't dealt with me before. So I said, I pay cash. And she said, oh, yeah, that's not going to work. We're cashless. So a few things. One, in New Mexico, and it's different state by state, but in New Mexico, cash is protected legal tender. So it is fully illegal to refuse cash in New Mexico. And as you likely know, and Catherine Austin Fitz is always telling us, at this stage of the game, cash is like it's our last safeguard between freedom and full on like communist enslavement. It is so very important that we protect cash and the right to use cash, which also protects our anonymity, our privacy, and also creates a more equitable space, right? So many people who are on the like equity conversation, which is not something that appeals to me, don't understand that in refusing cash, you're refusing to do business with people who are debanked or don't have credit cards or don't have good credit, right? That is classist and inequitable in and of itself. But what really got to me was the we're cashless, as though this made up phrase kind of like took care of it. Like, no, we can't take cash because we're cashless. It's like, no, there's no such thing as being cashless. You're a business, which means when you're receiving compensation for goods and services that you're offering to the public, you don't have the benefit of being this made up thing called cashless. And this is one thing I've seen in the like post Obama era, which we're going to go deeper into Obama's latest nonsense, is let's make up these phrases. And because we make up these phrases like Trumper, anti-vaxxer, climate change denier, cashless, people are going to go along with it. And like, I mean, I get it in terms of mind control and linguistic sorcery. When we make up a name for something, we establish existential validity for said thing, which is why I really push back around this cashless thing. There's no such thing. I refuse to give that existential validity. And so in service of attempting to create less cancel clearly, in service to being a more peaceful part of my local community, I paid with credit card, and then I took it up with executive management the next day, and I received effusive apologies and was told that they will always receive cash. And that reminds me, it wasn't on the list, but I had this dazzling display of my own hypocrisy, of the hypocrisy that I'm still in the process of transmuting yesterday. I was driving up north to the country with my friend, And he was going off on the car in front of him, who he didn't like the way that it was driving, and it had a California license plate. And he's like, stupid liberals. And I was like, you know what? It's really divisive. And it's also like super bigoted to assume that just because someone has a Colorado license plate, that they're like a mind controlled libtard. Like, we are driving in a car with New Mexico plates, and we are not of that ilk. So why would you project that onto strangers? And then I said, you know, I am really holding myself to a higher standard of being the change, walking my talk, you know, walking the talk that I write about and teach about and preach on my podcasts. And I'm just speaking for myself in that I really want to hold the frequency of unity and radiate that out into my community. And as I'm saying the words out loud, a Tesla truck comes up next to me. Now, I find the Tesla trucks super offensive, not because of Elon Musk and like the pushback that now he's getting from former Tesla owners and devotees because of his stint at Doge. That has never been my issue with Elon Musk. I don't have that thing that people have against him. I'm not a fan of his futurist chip your brain nonsense, but I'm not on that bandwagon per se. I have detested Tesla trucks from the second I first saw them because they look like war machines that are degrading and demoralizing our society. And so I have, since I started seeing them, made it a practice of pushing back so that the Tesla car owners know, like, this hideous, ugly, demoralizing eyesore is not welcome amidst your human family. And so as I'm saying the words, I'm striving to be the change and be unity. This Tesla truck passes us on the right, and I flip it off, putting my middle finger out the window. My friend is laughing at me so hardcore, like, do you see your hypocrisy right now? I was like, oh yeah, I totally see it. I'm well aware of this hypocrisy right now. And I'm a work in progress. I recognize that. But it's also this like kind of push-pull of not wanting to normalize my local community becoming like a war zone and looking like a war zone. So this is where, like, I still have some inner ambivalence. Like, I do want to be the change and radiate peace. And I also feel like there's something to be said for degrading the social landscape, degrading society as a whole. So I don't know the answer. Like, I still want to flip off the Tesla trucks whenever I see them because I don't like them and I don't want to see them on the roads. I don't want to be driving through a war zone when I'm just like tooling around my neighborhood. So I don't know. You know what? This brings me to the next topic. Well, there's more about the languaging, but since we're on this, I'm just going to bounce around today. I feel fine about it, as I do pretty much every time I podcast, because it's the Aquarian age and time isn't linear, and neither are podcasts. So the other realm where I'm having so much ambivalence and have for a while now is, so we're now seeing the amping up of the collateral damage from the kill shots. So what that means is we're seeing more and more people die and get sick from having availed themselves to genocidal injections that were called COVID vaccines. And as much as I railed against the vaccines before they were deployed, and I was even on the bandwagon before COVID, and we were dealing with the childhood vaccination schedule and having them pushed on me, you know, at my local clinic when I was just getting blood work or wanted to get, you know, a referral to a physical therapist for a swiftly healing toe that the doctors had said was broken. And once people chose to get those injections, I made a swift adjustment because as I am so keenly aware of the power of words in manifesting sickness or health, in programming the body for illness or thriving, I personally feel it's irresponsible to speak to the harms of vaccines in people who've chosen to get them, because I don't want to play a part in activating any negative coding, any possibility for those people to be harmed by the vaccines. This has put me in a very funky place now that more and more people are getting turbo cancers, aka vaccine injuries, and checking out when they're super young. So here's what happened just in the past week. A 35-year-old woman shared with me that her husband dropped dead of turbo cancer at, I think he was 42 years old, okay? And how quickly it came on, and how when the doctors told her it wasn't a matter of months or weeks or even days, he died within minutes of the doctors telling her what was going on. So, of course, I'm just dealing with the emotional trauma of what she's dealing with and being compassionate and empathetic when what's going on in my mind is he was clearly vaxxed. Does she know that this is from the vax? But I'm not going to say anything because I'm assuming if he's vaxxed, so is she and so are their children. And especially with the children, like, I don't want to activate that. So then a couple days ago, I swing by my local thrift store. And this is the second time this has happened with the woman who runs the thrift store, starts crying because she had two more friends die from these turbo cancers, and these friends are under 50. And the same thing had happened with this exact same woman like a couple months ago. And so again, I'm holding space for the grief that she's dealing with. And that, of course, takes precedence over, well, you know, it's because of the vax. I'm not going to do that. But she says to me, you know, I just never thought that this was the age where I'd start to lose all my friends. And I said, well, this isn't, like, this is an anomaly. And I was just kind of gently kind of testing the waters to see, like, is she going to pick up on what I'm throwing down? And she's like, you're right, you know, our food is so poisoned, and, you know, with all the pesticides, we're not eating, you know, chicken today isn't what chicken was when we were kids. And I'm just nodding my head and going along with her because she's not picking it up. And here's my personal confusion about it. I get annoyed with my friends who are not aligned with the dominant narratives and keep it to themselves. So my friends who voted for Trump or who support Trump, my friends who are not down with the alphabet agenda, or, you know, pick woke agenda X, and yet they choose to keep it to themselves because they don't want to be unfriended. They want to stay in their friend groups. Because I see it doing so much harm that we normalize these singular perspectives, right? The idea that everyone who supports Trump is a white supremacist, misogynist moron is not helping the larger landscape. And so when those people who did vote for Trump stay silent about it, it supports the fictional narrative that every sane, normal, free-thinking person hates Trump and, you know, everyone else is a bigot, right? That doesn't help. And I have a friend of mine who is in one of these. She tends to keep her opinions to herself, and she also has, you know, a lot of friends and goes to a lot of parties, a lot of things that I'm not invited to anymore. And her perspective is, well, what I'm doing is gaining their trust and gaining inroads so that when the right moment comes for me to speak my truth, I won't be cast out because I've already gotten an in with these people. And so one aspect of me sees the intelligence in that strategy, right? Okay, I see that, but it's twofold. One, she's not being honest about where she's at. Two, it's investing quite a lot of time and energy into these friendships on the bet that these people are not going to eject her when they find out the truth. And she did share with me that one of these friendships that she'd been cultivating for several years, as soon as she mentioned something about what was going on in the local Indian community, she was unfriended by this person. So I was just noticing, like, wow, that's like several years of investment based on, I don't want to say untruth, but on withholding. And then after investing and creating all that, you know, supposedly safe foundation of a friendship, as soon as she did speak her truth, the friendship was gone. But it's like, when I'm doing it, like with this woman who, you know, was mourning the loss of two more friends under 50 who dropped dead, I feel so conflicted because it's like I'm playing pretensies. I'm completely playing stupid and pretending that I don't know what's going on, mostly to honor her health and well-being, right? I'm not trying to avoid the conflict. I don't want to activate her own fear. But what annoys me is like, we have a situation, and actually, you know, the Obama speech that I'm going to go into later speaks to this, where I can understand why people are confused about the truth of COVID, the truth of Trump, the truth of climate change, because the mainstream media is not only putting forth at a deafening level and consistency these lies and these fictional accounts of what's going on, which are not true, and suppressing and censoring and shadow banning the truth about PCR tests, about viruses, about the bioweapon, about climate change, about, you know, Trump and all of these things. But I don't give the same leeway to all these people dying of myocarditis and strokes and turbo cancers, because the fact that allegedly more than half of the entire global population took part in this giant medical experiment by availing themselves to these experimental gene therapy injections that were misbranded as vaccines, that was public knowledge. We all know that that happened. So that's where I get annoyed when I'm being, you know, subtly and silently asked to play along with this Emperor New Clothes kind of like mind wipe fiction that we have no idea why all of a sudden these young people are dying from turbo cancer. We never even heard the term turbo cancer until post-COVID experimental gene therapy injections. So none of that was censored. People know what they signed up for. It annoys me, like, whatever the mind control is, and I would love to know, because it's so brilliant that they've gotten these people to, what, forget that they took part in this medical experiment, to like suspend every last shred of critical thinking that would allow them to make the connections of like, all of these people who are dropping dead, you know, for no known reason, happened to also take part in this medical experiment that we also took part in, not you and me, but, you know, a vast majority of people. And now we all have to play this giant game of pretensies around all these deaths. I mean, we don't have to. I'm certainly choosing to. I'm not victimizing myself to Emperor's New Clothes. I'm just confused by it. I'm ambivalent around it. I mean, I'm wondering if there's a self-preservation part. There isn't. I don't care about pissing people off. I don't think that me having a different opinion about things should be a reason for me to be banned from stores or unfriended or whatnot. I just, you know, it's like the people who were super thrilled when Trump got elected this go round. I didn't want to burst their bubble. Like, I'm happy people are happy. I didn't want to be the one to be like, but Peter Thiel, but the tech bros, but, you know, Elon Musk was actually not elected, and I don't think it's kosher for him to be doing this Doge thing. Am I pleased with some of the things that they uncovered? Sure. Absolutely. Do I think that Trump was the better choice than Kamala? Absolutely. But I mean, we're all seeing now there are issues. It's problematic for sure. And when he was elected and people were super happy, I don't want to rain on their parade. Like, no one's asking my opinion. They're happy. They're hopeful. That's a wonderful energetic frequency to be putting into our realm. So I didn't say anything, but it's a little bit different around all these COVID deaths where we absolutely know what is going on, but I don't want to tell a vaccinated person that they're in danger. That just feels reckless, but it's weird to me that they haven't put it together. I just find that so odd, and I'm wondering, like, how are you guys dealing with this? I can't be the only one. We're all seeing in our spheres an inordinate amount of these cancers, of these strokes, of these, infertilities, of these whatevers. How are you handling it? In your sphere, are you straight out saying, well, we know it's the vax? I'm still figuring that one out because I feel I'm not going to take it so far as to say, like, I feel like a fraud. I don't feel like a fraud. I don't have shame around me keeping my mouth shut. I just feel like we're placating the toddlers and like allowing them to continue to believe in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy, which is fine when you're five. But when we're middle-aged, like maybe it would be better for us to deal with reality and like the reality of it seems like these are all side effects of this giant experiment. Like it seems very obvious to me. Okay. Circling back to the weaponized languaging and the switching up of these phrases. It used to be that the people we saw on the street who were sleeping in sleeping bags and begging for change were called homeless people. Now we're like, if we're following the dictates of the language police, we're supposed to be calling them unhoused. And I'm like, there's no difference. There's literally no difference. Unhoused, homeless, un and less pretty much mean the exact same thing. There is a lack. That thing is not. They negate the words that they are modifying, either as suffixes or prefixes. So, someone who is unhoused doesn't have a house. Someone who is homeless doesn't have a home. I don't see the point in this particular weaponized. Ooh, I felt a little tinge of still healing, right? Notice what I just said. I didn't say I have pain, I didn't say there's a problem. Oh, look. My wrist is still in the process of healing and upgrading. I love you. Thank you for being so strong. And for those listening with your ears, I did a gesture and it created a sensation in my swiftly healing, strengthening wrist. And as I was saying, like, Jordan Peterson, the one thing that I always stick with him, problematic figure though he may be, and absolutely is he will not cede the linguistic territory. And this World War III that we've already been in for several years is a war of words and narrative and psychology and propaganda. And so, whereas there's absolutely no connotative difference between homeless and unhoused, what it signals is I obey the language police. I am an obedient little citizen, and I'm using that word very specifically to mean slave, versus I am a free thinking woman who doesn't need to make a completely nonsensical linguistic shift just to demonstrate my allegiance to the would-be controllers and enslavers of this realm. So, being mindful that like these switcheroos are just a way of controlling us and getting us to bend the knee, to cede the linguistic territory and declare our obedience to the dark side, the fucktards. And so I encourage us to not buy into these linguistic shifts, these weaponized switcheroos. Yeah. they're not serving us. And it is very important for us to protect the linguistic territory, to not cede the linguistic territory, which is why I personally don't do the they, them. And at the same time, I'm not going to insult someone. So if I am being presented with someone who is playing the language policing game and wants to shove the they, them down my throat, I will just use the person's name over and over and over and over and over and over again, or I will say this being or that being to avoid ceding the linguistic territory. And I encourage you and me and all of us to be both compassionate and also clever in sidestepping attempts to police our language and shove the language of the dark side down our throats and to meander around them as much as possible. Okay, so the other one which just came to mind when I was speaking about the language of healing is the word struggle. So the word struggle is very often attached to certain healing initiations. I struggle with anxiety. I struggle with Parkinson's. I struggle with seizures, ADHD, XYZ. Struggle is also the 38th gene key, the shadow of the 38th gene key. And I was working with a client this week who was specifically wanting to focus on the 38th gene key and her relationship to struggling to speaking her truth. And by like, of course, it's all by design, what I was going to call coincidence. The majority of my coaching clients right now are all working on speaking their truth and moving away from repressing and suppressing their truth, which has backed up on them, and figuring out how to do it in their just right style. And this is, you know, something that I love working with people on, because my style of truth telling is not necessarily going to be your style of truth telling. I can be super blunt. I, you know, don't have a lot of fear in speaking my truth or in upsetting other people. So I can tend towards the more harsh or blunt. It's not to say that I don't have compassion or empathy. I see a lot of value a lot of times in shocking people, in pattern interrupting people out of their delusions or their slumber or their programming or their unconsciousness. And for other people who are wired differently, it's finding the just right ways for them to speak their truth in a way that is aligned with, you know, their personality, with their core core beliefs, their character, their cosmic blueprint, et cetera, et cetera. So this one client, we were dealing with struggle because she was claiming that she was struggling to speak her truth and not worry about people liking her, which is not, trust me, I've endured and continue to endure many shadows and many obstacles in places where, you know, I'm still growing and learning, and people pleasing has not been one of them. And what I had said to this woman, and I also say to any of my clients who say they're struggling with certain physical symptoms, is that struggle is an opinion and struggle is a choice. It's nothing we inherently have to do. It's an attitude, right? Struggle is what we bring to life's vicissitudes if we choose to be in struggle. But we don't have to struggle with wanting to be liked. We can dance with the outdated story that I need to be liked. We can be in the process of transmuting a desire to be liked. We can be in a process of relinquishing a limitation around a desire to be liked. But when we say struggle, not only are we solidifying the conflict vibes, right? That are embedded in that word, encoded in that word, we're carrying them into the present moment, therefore continuing to direct reality and direct ourselves to have a difficult time in speaking our truth. So anytime I say I'm struggling with XYZ, I am bringing that conflict, that internal dissonance into my present moment and seeding my future with more of it. When I choose to relinquish struggle, and move into I'm learning from, I'm dancing with, I'm transmuting, I'm moving through, I'm relinquishing, right? These beautiful ing words that keep us in motion. I'm not invoking any conflict vibes, any dissonant vibes, any parts of me that are going to create contraction, constriction, blockages, confusion, right? All of that is just released when we release the opinion, the choice that is struggle. So I am encouraging you, as you know, if you are someone who has had in the past a predilection to utilize this word, I encourage you to, it's a couple fold. One, definitely relinquish and replace that word with an ing that's going to move you through it. And also, and this is really key in terms of getting to the core of it, is where is this idea of struggle serving me? Like, what parts of me like this? Do I like the idea of struggling with chronic fatigue and inflammation because it allows me to get out of doing a lot of things that I don't want to do? Do I like the idea of struggle because it allows me to collect pity and external validation from people? Is it simply an unconscious way of speaking that doesn't apply because I recognize that there aren't any benefits for me, right? This is going back to, you know, the gentleman who called foul on my language of healing protocols. It is crucial to get real with where we are at in the present moment. So let's say that I am switching up the I struggle with anxiety to I'm moving through some anxiety, or I am transmuting an historic predilection towards anxiety. If I say that and I feel constriction in my chest, my eyes well up, I feel like a ball in my belly, then that is showing me that there's something in the relationship to struggle that I am still needing to acknowledge and integrate. And this is where quantum languaging is such a powerful tool for transformation, and where what I call transitional languaging, when we're using language that indicates we're moving towards something else, that we're moving through, you know, a past negative towards a future positive. This is where it's so helpful, because when we're in touch with the somatic experience of speaking these upgrades and we notice the internal pushback in the physiological system, we can utilize that pushback, the locations in our body, the quality of sensation, to take us deeper into the outdated belief system, the wounded parts of us that have, you know, have been until now fragmented, and they're inviting acknowledgement and reintegration, which is where the parts work comes in and is such a powerful companion piece to the quantum languaging in any sort of transformational coaching or upgrading capacity. Okay, I have a couple more littles, and then we'll get into Obama's nonsense. So this happened twice in a row, actually. I have been eating out a lot, and I'm very excited to switch that up, although one of the restaurants I've been eating out at has a no seed oil whatsoever policy, plus the food is delicious. So I'm always so happy to support them, and I'm actually making a note to write them a Yelp review. Because it's a great way to be of service. And this is another side note. When I'm noticing that it's time for me to expand into more abundance, right? If there's any sort of like constriction or contraction around money or finances, my first move is to be generous. Like, where can I give? Where can I donate? How can I give back to my community? And it doesn't always have to be like physical cash. It can be, let me write some positive Yelp reviews for businesses that I really like. I also have a practice of, if I do any negative Yelp reviews, I challenge myself to do at least 2 positive Yelp reviews to balance it out, because I know how helpful those are for local businesses. Or even like leaving an Amazon review for books that I like, which is a perfect time for me to invite you. As you have read and gotten value out of any of my books, Word Up, The Language of Betterarchy, Pop Propaganda, and or Yes, I Am, I invite you to and thank you for leaving me positive reviews on Amazon. Those are so, so helpful for authors in selling more books and getting their messages out farther and wider. Okay, so what I noticed happened at two restaurants within the same week was the hostess like giving me the seating options and saying, well, you can't sit there and you can't sit there and you can't sit there and you can't sit there, but you can choose from there. And noticing the constriction that I feel in my body in being told what I can't do. And then like using my big girl tools to transmute any contraction or triggering that I'm feeling around it, and recognizing that it's a far more effective strategy to speak to what the options actually are. So the upgrade, which I didn't offer because it's not like the hostesses were, you know, seeking quantum languaging advice, is here's what I have available. You could sit here, you could sit here, you could sit here, you could sit here, and presenting the positives and the cornucopia, the abundant array of options, and allowing me to connect to that frequency of abundance and yes, and oh my God, there's so many places that I can sit, versus invoking the negative, you can't do this, which for me has me doing some internal acrobatics to move back into the positive, because negative frequencies has just been presented to me. And I just prefer the positive frequencies. So, you know, this comes into, you know, especially for parents or anyone who's dealing with children, it's going to be so much easier to deal with the littles when we're speaking to not, you can't do this and don't do this and don't do this, versus like, wouldn't this be more fun, right? How about instead of running around with scissors, why don't we sit here with this cozy teddy bear and do this puzzle together? Or we could color the Yes, I Am coloring book together, which sounds more fun, right? So we're not, the energy isn't on the can't. It's on here are the available yeses, which one feels more fun. And it's a great way to redirect the attention and the energy towards a yes and to, you know, bring in that standard improv precept, yes and versus the no but. I think more caffeine is in order. It's early here. Okay, one more before we dive into Obama. So I am noticing an increasing resistance to screens in general. And to this end, I am very excited to be transitioning into a career path that will have me utilizing screens much less. In the meantime, there is maintaining everything that I have going on, which in this instance means staring into a tiny dot at the top of my laptop and speaking for anywhere from 90 minutes to 3 hours a couple times a week to make podcasts. So I hit the wall this week. That does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to tune into the second half, you can find that over on both my Locals and my Patreon platforms. At both platforms, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus that warm, fuzzy, yummy do-gooder feeling that comes along with supporting those who put out videos and podcasts and sometimes hard to swallow opinions and perspectives, in supporting us in keeping on keeping on. So thank you so much for supporting me at whatever tier or monthly amount feels most aligned for you, and meet me over on the Locals and the Patreon for part two. As you are wanting to scope out part two and not feeling aligned with the memberships, all of my second half podcasts are available for one-time $5 donations. If that is inspiring to you, you can email me through my website, dannykatz.com, and I am very happy to arrange a private exchange. One last reminder that I am offering my live Language of Healing webinar on Thursday, June 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. Mountain Time. The webinar will be recorded, so if you can't make it live, still register. You will be able to tune into that recording from the moment I send it to you until eternity. And I would love to have you there with us live so we can workshop any symptoms you might be experiencing, moving through healing initiations, upgrades, et cetera, et cetera. So run, don't walk, to register by way of the link in the show description. That does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you, yes, you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.